Hey guys, Montel here, and welcome to another episode of Let's Be Blunt with Montel. Today, we're going to unravel the complexities of the cannabis law on both sides of the border. I'm talking about North and South, Canada and the United States, and we couldn't ask for a more informed guest. Joining us is a cannabis lawyer from Toronto. He's also an author, podcaster, and advocate for cannabis reform through various creative channels. We'll also discuss his newest documentary project, Colton's Maze, and see how we can all support the critical cause it represents. Russell Bennett, thank you so much for being a part of Let's Be Blunt with Montel today, sir.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This is such a pleasure.
Absolutely. Look, let's start from the beginning. You know, I always like to do this for my listeners. Give me a little bit about your background. Where are you from? Where you grew up? Where you went to school? And then what started moving you down the path of creativity and activism and also the path of cannabis? So let's go way back. Where are you from?
Way back. Toronto. Well, originally, my mother gave birth to me in the Toronto General Hospital, January 1st, 1971. It was a very cold day, but, you know, it was kind of like today. Today's the second day of spring here in Toronto, and it's snowing. That's just not normal.
That's bizarre.
On Christmas, there was no snow. What's going on here? So Toronto is as most of your listeners know, just on the north side of Lake Ontario. And so as a young Torontonian, the first time I had any brush with cannabis was in grade 11. Yeah. Grade 11, grade 12, actually. Mm-hmm. My classmate,
that was about 10 years ago, right?
It was just 10 years ago. Exactly. It was that time in life where Nancy Reagan was on the blowhorn.
Yes, say no.
And, you know, in Canada, we get all the U.S. channels. And
this is your brain. This frying egg crack. Is your brain on pie.
I mean, great marketing, right? That was so effective because everybody was afraid. They didn't want their brains to turn into a fried egg, obviously.
Yeah, that was about as effective as, Reefer Madness back in the early 30s, but go ahead.
Even better. That stuff, you're going to kill somebody with an axe, right?
Right.
Anyway.
Only black, though.
Only if you're black or Mexican.
Mexican, right.
Or in Canada, Chinese. I mean, it's just, yes. Anybody but white.
Right.
Just before I keep going about my background, I do want to insert here that I wrote about this extensively in my book, and I don't think many people are reading it, unfortunately. I think it has to do with marketing, because nobody really wants, a 600-page legal book. But I did a tremendous amount of research on why cannabis became illegal in Canada. And it was on the backs of the opium criminalization in 1908 here in Canada. And that was because of this huge effort to limit Chinese immigration and to try and extradite, get rid of Chinese Canadians after they had built this railroad.
Absolutely. That's the same thing that was going on in the United States. A lot of people don't find the association, but truly, I think that association, crossed the borders back then at the exact same time. I mean, if you go back to the 1840s, 50s, 60s, when those Chinese laborers were here, actually building those railroads across both countries, we also know that opium dens were prolific in the majority of the Western communities, majority used by Caucasians who would actually help to proliferate the use of opium. So go ahead.
And that's it. And that so one of our officials from our capital, Ottawa, was sent, he's the deputy minister of labor, his name is Mackenzie King. He was sent to Vancouver because there were riots there against the Chinese who were taking over the white people's jobs at the time. And they had this riot and many Chinese businesses were destroyed. And so on the heels of that, he was supposed to hand out all these reparations, all this money to help them. And then he stumbled into opium dens and discovered that it was this horrific thing that white women, young women's lives were being ruined by opium. And so that's why we needed this national law. It was absurd.
It's the same thing that happened in the United States, 1908, 9, 10, when they were saying that, there's a guy, Anslinger, who
Anslinger,
who is literally known to have stated that, you know, marijuana makes white women want to have sex with black men, would make a black man step on a white man's shadow, all this the ridiculousness. And then when we really look at it, we understand that Anslinger, who had been the main prohibitionist leader for alcohol, when prohibition was repealed and alcohol was allowed, he lost his job, and therefore he needed a new job. And that job was funded for him by William Randolph Hearst, Charles DuPont, because at the time, hemp became the dirty word, having already been the major. I mean, you know, most people in the world look back in the 1800s and 1700s and think that cotton and tobacco were the two big cash crops. Bullshit. The truth of the matter is that hemp had been the cash crop since the late 1600s. As a matter of fact, in Canada and the United States, you could actually pay your taxes if you were a farmer and you had hemp farms. Why? Because hemp was the major reason why we had sails, rope, canvas, clothing. You and I could chop it up for hours on the history, and people don't want to hear it.
One of the most seminal texts that, I mean, it's not a text, but The Emperor Wears No Clothes. Yes. That was one of those books that came out in my, I guess it was when I was in my 20s, and I got a copy of it. You read it and you're like, why isn't this part of the history of both of our countries, right?
I can tell you something. I've been involved in the cannabis movement since way before it was vogue, way before anybody ever thought that this was something that was ever going to take off. I'm talking, let's go all the way back to 2000. I was like in 2000 leading the charge in the United States with testifying before legislators across the country to help try to legalize cannabis for medical purposes to ensure that patients had access to efficacious medication. And even back that far, you know, I was astonished at the lack of knowledge that most people, even in our business and industry today, the lack of knowledge that people don't have about the entire process of what took place. Most people don't understand that even during World War II, you know, in the United States, they had Hemp for Victory, where they legalized hemp even after it had been made illegal. Why? Because we still had ropes for sailing ships. We still had uniforms that had to be funded. Most people don't know that the entire Revolutionary Army in the United States was clothed in hemp clothing. George Washington was all of the forefathers of the United States grew hemp. Most people don't even know that the Napoleonic Wars against Russia were fought because of hemp. People don't understand this.
The really Constitution itself was written on hemp paper, right? Isn't that it's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So you go back to the 200s. I have a little more gray, a little more salt in my beard than you do.
Oh, believe me, brother. That's only because I take care of that. You know, I hate looking in the mirror and seeing that color. I'm so sorry. That's just me.
I love it. I love it. This is three children right here. This is
I got four of them. So if I wasn't taking care of this every couple of days, you would see them all written on my face.
You must be a great dad because anybody who is so outspoken and just trying to set the record straight for hemp and cannabis in North America, you're a hero. You're a hero of mine. And I think that you should think about running for office because—
Well, you know, my friend, it's very funny. I'll tell you a real quick one on that, and we got to get back to you now.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you a real quick one on that. I was really, you know, if you, first off, since I was a young child, and I will date myself, but I graduated from high school in 1974. So I'm a little older than you. Yes. And, in that time, let me just tell you, before I even graduated from high school, I was very politically minded. Literally was the first student appointed to the Board of Education in Anne Arundel County, which was one of the first counties in America that actually put a student on the Board of Education. Nice. I was involved in student politics, regional politics, statewide politics. I was on the board of, I was a parliamentarian for the Maryland Association of Student Councils. I was one of the people appointed to the Chesapeake Regional Association of Student Councils. I was my class president for years. So when I graduated from high school, of course, in my yearbook, I was voted most likely to be president of the United States.
There you go.
And I will tell you that for a lot of my upgrow when I was growing up, and I went in the military, and I had a pretty nice military career, and I actually really seriously thought about politics when that stopped, even before I started the Montel One Show. And right. then, but I went in, the Montel One Show took me to Hollywood. And then after doing that, I've been involved in, I'm an advocate for lots of different things. I believe that my value is much more valuable as an advocate than I could ever be as a politician, because, you know, first off, in the United States, politics right now is honestly, I think historians will look back at this period of time 50 years from now and recognize that this was the political atmosphere in America is what brought down the biggest democracy in the world, the atmosphere that's here right now. Right. I hope so. Anyway, a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking at the Defense Intelligence Agency. You know, when I was in the military, I held some of the highest clearances that our country has, worked on some of the most top secret information that we had as a nation. And I honestly thought that that would be a good stepping stone into politics. But right. I will tell you now, somebody asked me, well, Montel, I think you really should be a politician. And I was like, you know, I don't want to die. And I'm saying
that to you. I laugh not because that, I mean, it's funny you say that, but look, we're both going to die. Let's be clear.
Right.
Where I think this issue goes sideways is the lack of politicians willing to speak out. And I recall that one of your previous episodes, you list the 12 people who had written this letter to set the platform for moving cannabis from Schedule One in the States to Schedule Three, or eliminating it altogether from the Controlled Substances Act. And and those politicians are now, I guess, brave in a sense, because they're speaking out against the current regime, but still, it's still not strong enough.
No, they, you know, and the truth of the matter is that, you know, there are so we're going to chop this up later on in this podcast. Let's come back to this and talk a little bit about it, because, you know, I think you nailed it. Their reticence is really their own fear. Again, their fear of being ostracized for an opinion that they all have a right to have.
Exactly. You know,
we set the standard, I think, and I'm not trying to pat America on the back, but I'm telling you, I think one of the standards that America set when it comes to politics is this idea that everyone has the right to their own opinion. That was something that the rest of the world has always looked at and admired. But yes. Right now in America, that right to opinion is going out the door. And right. going out the door so quickly that we, by the time we realize how far it's gone, we will never be able to get it back. And, you know, I'm one of those that I was just having a conversation about this 2 days ago. I'm not a right. I'm not a left. I am probably one of the most independent people on this planet, I believe, politically. I do not look at any issue that I look at to evaluate and think of someone else's opinion first. Right. My opinion is all that matters to me. So whether it be looking at this cup of coffee that I have sitting in front of me, you know, there's research that's coming out now claiming that coffee may somehow be bad for you. And we know that after thousands of years, coffee's not bad for you. We know that. But, you know, there's some whole group of buttheads that are trying to figure out a way to, you know, figure out how to come up with some other chemical stimulant so that they don't have to worry about, you know, not being able to patent something that nature gave us. It's the same thing that's happening here when it comes to cannabis. You know, the pharmaceutical industry would rather try to figure out how they can extract the 200 plus cannabinoids, which they will never even identify for another 20 years, and come up with something chemical, come up with something that is synthetic, rather than take what nature gave us. And these are the same people who claim to believe in science. And if they believe in science and they believe in who they claim to be one of the smartest people in history, is a guy by the name of Albert Einstein. And what did he say? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's what the planet gave us. For everything that's on this planet, there is something that's here to be the opposite of that. It has to be. That's why nature works. That's why we have a plus and a minus when it comes to, you know, to electrons. It's the same thing when it comes to illness and disease. We have a disease, but right now we are destroying that that plus that could have taken care of that disease by burning down the rainforest all over the world. And right. there was something that was in that rainforest that was there to deliberately feed on that other disease. But we're destroying them, so now they'll be lost forever. We may not ever find them again. It's the same thing when it comes to cannabis. We are so ignorant to the thought, no, we don't believe in science. We don't believe in global warming. We don't believe in anything else that's happening. But we do believe that marijuana must be bad for you. I feel like just reaching through a screen and smacking somebody upside the head. So I'm sorry. You know, I could take us off place. I mean, people, guys, don't go away, please. I want you to hear what Russell is doing, because Russell is doing, he's doing some God's work for us here in this industry. And, you know, so let's go back again. So you were born in Toronto. You grew up there, right? Would you go to college, high school? I guess high school there, college there?
I went to high school at a boys' school. I wore a blazer and a tie every day. My parents thought, my mom was a public school teacher, and she thought the private school would be better for me. Gotcha. I was one of those straight A students, you know, excelled at academics. I think it was grade 11, maybe. I can't remember actually now if it's grade 12. I think it was my graduating year was grade 12. And I purchased a bag of weed from a classmate and was really curious, because a police officer had come into our English class with his 3-panel display case of all the narcotics that were illegal. And it was supposed to be educating us on what not to do. But instead, of course, I'm a curious mind. At the age of 16, I think. And I was like, you know what? Let's just try some of this stuff. What's the weed part? That looks really interesting. So I got some. Of course, as the story goes, I went over to my friend's house to roll my first joint, which was a debacle. Mm-hmm. Not only because I couldn't roll a joint, but there were seeds in the weed. But it was like that time where I think it was Justice Ginsburg was denied on the judiciary in the states. This was back in 87, I think, 87, mm-hmm. 88. So my friends, if you get this, my friend was living with his grandmother, who was hard of hearing, and his dad was yelling at his grandmother downstairs discussing why Justice Ginsburg wasn't going to be put on, I think, the judiciary at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was because he had admitted to smoking weed in university. And so his dad was yelling, it's marijuana, it's cannabis. And I'm looking at my friend, I'm like, we're rolling the joint at the same time going, are we going to get burned? Are we going to go to jail? Right. So fortunately, he was talking about Ginsburg and not about us. We eventually smoked the joint, and it was like, a portal of goodliness opened up.
Snap, crackle, pop, though, because you had all the seeds in that joint, right?
Lots of seeds. But it was like time altered, and everything became slower and more aesthetically pleasing. And I just had this, it was like a cosmic moment. I don't think, I've smoked a lot of weed since then. And it never has been like that for me since.
I just pause you there for just a second. I've talked about this to with a lot of friends also. You know, though there's cannabis now of every ilk and type out across the country. We've crossbred so much that, you know, the terms don't even mean anything anymore. However, you know, I can remember the same thought process. I probably smoked my first joint back in 1969.
Nice. And,
you know, back when, you know, most of the idiots in the world, both in the Northwest and, you know, I think some of the guys over in Canada who were growing some, you know, everybody was trying their best back then to grow the minor cannabinoids out of it so they could increase the THC levels. But still, you know, we're talking about plants back then that probably had a maximum of 13 or 14% THC. And I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever experienced a better euphoria out of cannabis than I did when I was younger. Now the weed that's out here, it's what we get, what we have to get. However, back then, you're not kidding, boy, that was a whole nother experience in the world.
Right. Yeah. And I think that it, because of that experience, it changes who you are. It changes who you are in a political sense, because now you are a criminal, right? Number one, because it's against the law. And number two, because you see yourself, you're not a criminal, you don't see yourself as a criminal, but because, so that that your experience, your personal experience, it contrasts the law of the land, and it sets up this duality, and does, and it undermines your belief, your trust, your value in the state, and it questions. You start to ask. There's a cascading series of questions you start asking. Why do we have this law? Where did it come from? Why do we still have this law? Why isn't this law away? Right. And so for most of my adult life until 2018, I was plagued with this question of why do we have the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act still, when it's obviously evident. And it was in our country, it was the LaDain Commission. In your country, it was the Schaefer Commission in the 70s that analyzed weed and went, you know, across the nations to get all this testimony about how it was not as harmful as tobacco and alcohol, and how it actually helped you in a medicinal way. All that evidence just sat for decades until here in Canada, until finally 2018, we legalized federally. Now, we are the test case for the, you know, G20 nations. Now Germany has legalized, which is, you know, it's coming.
And the sky hasn't fallen in Canada last time.
Sky has not fallen. And, you know, you mentioned I'm doing a document, trying to do a documentary on this. And it focuses on the state of Nebraska, where the former governor, Pete Ricketts, said in 2021, if you legalize marijuana, it will kill your kids. That was, you know, broadcast nationally. And I just hooked on to that statement and thought, well, we've legalized nationally here since 2018. It's 2024 now. Not many children have died. So what's he talking about, and where's he coming from? And is this the last bastion, the kind of, you know, old world view that is not going to be here anymore, that is going to eventually disappear? So I want to capture it.
You got it. Well, for it to disappear, we got to have these old bastards start kicking the can. And I'm so sorry I say it that way, but
there's a lot of that. Or they have to at least be aware that, you know, their views are not accurate anymore, and they might have to learn something.
Get them out of office. Let's go before you. I definitely want to talk about the special. But I want to talk about you were hitting on a little bit. Let's look at the landscape and the difference between Canada and, you know, and what's going on in the United States. I mean,
well, here in Canada, 2001 was when we legalized for medicinal purposes. And it was because of a litigant. It was because of this man, Terry Parker, who had epilepsy, and he grew his own weed to control his own seizures. He was arrested, his plants were confiscated. He had a great defense team. They used the evidentiary record of a previous case that Christopher Clay, he litigated, and I made my documentary in 98 about his case. It was broadcast nationally here in Canada, called Stoned. And Stoned followed Chris's case about how cannabis is not a gateway drug. Cannabis just dispelled the case, basically dispelled all the myths. The trial judge wrote this incredible decision. And so the evidence in that case was used for Terry Parker's case. And the Court of Appeal in Ontario here said, well, the provision section 4 is nullified until the government can get its shit together and create a cannabis medical regulation. And they did. In 2001, they called it the MMAR, the Marijuana Medical Access Regulation, and it allowed people to grow their own cannabis for their own ailments. So 2001 in Canada, we were legal for medical. But unfortunately, Health Canada, which is the department that oversees it, really didn't want to oversee it. They really didn't want to approve it. They didn't want people applying for these things, these licenses to grow. And so it took about 15, 16 years of other litigants suing the government, saying this medical cannabis regime stinks. We can't access it for ourselves. We can't grow it for other people. So if over 15 years of suing the government, Health Canada had to keep coming back with more and more refined regulations. And so in 2016, we had this penultimate regulation called the ACMPR, the Access to Cannabis for Medical Purposes regulations. And that was on the heels of this tremendous decision called Allard versus Canada. And this gentleman out west, basically the defense team of John Conroy, an incredible litigator in British Columbia, mounted this incredible defense. The decision is 200 some pages. It found that the current regulations were unconstitutional, and so Health Canada had to come up with all new regulations to make it constitutional. 2 years later, because we had all these medical cannabis companies helping all these medical cannabis patients, Justin Trudeau, who came in as the new prime minister, he came out on a campaign of legalizing cannabis. So in 2018, we finally got the Cannabis Act. Now you'd think, okay, we finally reached nirvana here in Canada. It's just the exact opposite. Really, it's the Cannabis Act is still a criminal statute. It's based in criminal law. It's basically the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act for cannabis. They increased the penalties, but they created this licensing regime where if you apply and are able to obtain a license to grow, to process, to eventually to distribute, if you're lucky enough to do that, that's great, but you're in this elite group of licensees and everybody else that had been growing for years and years and years, you're now a criminal and face the harsh sanctions of the state. So there's groups of police that go around trying to take down, these illegitimate growers or illicit growers and illicit stores. And it's the same problem they had before legalization, which they just can't do it. They can't do it. There's too many. And still the so-called underground market still thrives here. And it's because of the same problems you have in California or any other legal state like Colorado. You've got the unlicensed market, which is allowed to do whatever they want and post their websites with the products with whatever concentrations they want. But the licit licensed market has to obey the law and pay all the taxes and suffer all of the regulatory
hoops. Which here in the United States is absolutely asinine. I mean, if you go to 2021, I think for a fact, we found out that close to $25 billion worth of legal cannabis was sold in the United States of America. But we know that close to $50 billion worth of gray and black market cannabis was sold here. And those numbers have just continued to go up exponentially for both groups. I mean, I think that we're going to look back and see that 2023 was probably somewhere around $30 to $32 billion worth of legal cannabis sold. But now, the illegal market has jumped over probably $90 billion because in every state that there is a legal grow, there is a burgeoning gray and black market.
Right. And so as a result, what are you going to do? So I have the weird distinction of having written the book on the Cannabis Act in Canada. Every year I update it. And yet in my preface last year, I'm calling for the rescinding of the Cannabis Act. So in my preface, I'm saying we need to get rid of the Cannabis Act, even though I'm the one who's writing about what the Cannabis Act is and all the cases that are coming out of it. It's the most bizarre thing. And I had to reach this conclusion because of what you just said, is that the unlicensed market is thriving. It will never go away. And the Cannabis Act in Canada is a failure. It's not helping. And so what we need really is a way to regulate the quality of the growing, the quality of making products so that people aren't ingesting or smoking, products that are going to hurt them or harm them in some way. And we also need to be able to have a market where people understand what is in their products and where it comes from so that like one of your previous guests who's growing in living soil is acknowledged as, you know, that's a product that you really want to buy, right?
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, I got to tell you something. I don't know. Like I have been, I argue with lots of people that are in this industry that are in the legal market all the time. It's like, as much as I'm happy for the fact that now we have, 38 states in the District of Columbia that have passed some form of cannabis law in the United States, in every single one of those markets, because all the legislation is entirely different, you know, they kind of push the people, some of the people who do the quality work, they push them into the black market and the gray market. But, you know, I would never purchase a product out of the black or gray market because there's no regulation whatsoever. And we don't, you know, I mean, one of the areas that I've been talking about recently, and I'm going to continue to talk about here on this podcast, is the fact that no one knows, even in the legal market, what the level of different types of pesticides and chemicals are being used on some of these plants. And we're not even testing for it. You know, we claim to have, you know, a testing organizations around the country that produce COAs, you know, certificates of analysis. But Rita, but you know, I can send it to three different places and get three different certificates of analysis. So really, is there a quality going on in what's being tested? Are we really looking to test because we're trying to protect the consumer? Or are we just looking to get a stamp on something?
And yes, and to add to what you just said, are those pesticides that are being used on cannabis plants really fit for when you ignite it? When you ignite the plant, you know, when you smoke the flower, is the pesticide is it the right pesticide? Like, what we don't know is how much that pesticide once you light it on fire, right?
Correct. At least
in your body.
Yes, there are a couple of organizations who are right now starting to look at this very, very closely. As a matter of fact, I had a guest on the show a couple of days ago or a couple of weeks ago who runs a laboratory that's doing just this. They're starting to take a look really hard at some of the things that we claim to be legal pesticides. Nobody's made a legal pesticide for a cannabis, but you know, they claim to be legal and they're using, let's say, another product's pesticide on this product. And you're absolutely right. You don't know how much of that stays in the product as we burn it. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's the other problem of irradiation. So a lot of companies in Canada, they will grow something, and of course powdery mildew is an incredible challenge for any grower, but they keep it on it after they cure it, and they irradiate it so that it's still on there, but it has no effect. But what you're then smoking or what you're then, you know, using for your edibles has PM on it.
Correct.
And irradiation is not the solution, but that's what the government deems as being now. That's healthy. That's good for you, right? That's so just not that's not good.
No, it's not good. Talk to me a little bit more about though. What's going? I don't want to run out of time because I'm going to have you back, my friend, because you know we didn't cover a lot of the things.
We're scratching the surface here. Yes,
this is barely scratching the surface. Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing and working on right now.
Well, I've got a podcast called Cannabis Law on Earth. I changed the name this year because it was Cannabis Law in Canada. And I was like, you know, after seeing the story in Nebraska, I had to interview this young boy's mom. Her name's Krista Eggers, and she's the manager for Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana. And she's leading the campaign. She's been leading the campaign since 2020 to get a ballot initiative in front of the voters. And again, this year.
And they have attempted to do ballot initiatives multiple times, have they not?
That's right. This is her third attempt. They failed the first two times. The first time was because a sheriff sued them for having a double question on the ballot, and he won, even though that question that was on the ballot was used to success in other states. And the second time, they couldn't get enough signatures, unfortunately, because their main sponsor, who was going to give them $1 million, died in a plane crash that he was flying. So, unfortunately, they couldn't get enough signatures, just a few thousand short. So this is their third attempt, and they need 78,000 signatures from Nebraskans and a bunch of different counties in order to get on the ballot by July 3rd of this year. And then it's going to be on the same day as Election Day for you guys federally and on in state of Nebraska on November 5th. So I wanted to tell this documentary of the campaign effort and also following her efforts to help her son, Colton, who's 9, who has epilepsy, who suffers from seizures daily, cannot get access to CBD, which is, I think, is a human rights issue.
And especially in one sense, we have this thing that we've called the hemp bill or farm bill in the United States that made CBD or made hemp legal all over the country. And there are states like Nebraska that have pulled out and said that no, CBD can't be legal, which is really bizarre to me. I just don't get it.
It is bizarre. So this is the story I'd love to tell so that at least viewers would be able to see this maybe from a different point of view. That I do want to interview the governor, Jim Pillen. I do want to interview State Senator Ricketts. And I want to interview the researchers that are behind the SAM organization, because I feel like they have their own point of view. And whether I'm with them or not, I just think that they have some kind of belief that legalizing marijuana is a bad thing. So I really want to understand that point of view and contrast it with what Krista and Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana are fighting against. I believe it's a really hot, it's a story of intense conflict in your country that is not being given national attention yet.
You know, go ahead and get out your stats right now on your podcast, on all the, where people can go to get more information. Again, this is called Colton's Maze, correct?
That's correct. We're just in the beginning, the infancy of getting this film together. Right now we need funding to head down to Nebraska to shoot for a week and then to follow up. And, you know, I think this is a story that needs to be told. So that's one major project I'm working on. And,
give people information about where they can reach out to. What is a website or a podcast or something they can go to?
You can always reach me on my law firm's website, which is cannabislaw.ca. There's an intake form there, or you can email me directly, rbennett@cannabislaw.ca. You know, a quick Google search for cannabis law comes up with my website. And the podcast,
and we'll tell people if they wanted to donate to this cause, how to do so.
I don't have a Kickstarter page yet, but maybe that would be a good thing to do is start one of those things up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will start one up very soon.
And how is Colton doing? I mean, I know Colton, again, living in Nebraska, is his family taking him out of state to be able to medicate him and bring him back, or what are they doing?
That was one of my first questions to Krista, and she said to me that they didn't want to move out of state due to insurance reasons, but also because of community, that they have a large community of people who are supporting her, and her husband is away on business a lot. So she's sometimes left as a single mom, and to get Colton the medicine, he's in and out of hospital all the time, so he's being treated by a hospital. But
I'm sure that if the hospital detects any cannabis in the system, they'll turn it up to the police. And
that's exactly it. You nailed it. Yeah, if they detect, because he's getting blood tests, they detect it in his blood, he could be taken away from his family. So it's a very, very awkward and challenging time right now.
It's ridiculous, especially in the fact that, you know, they can go across the border to a couple different states and find the relief that they need. But in that state, if they find out that he's even using it, the parents can be arrested, which is really just mind-boggling.
I mean, the neighboring state of Colorado has the brothers that created Charlotte's Web. You know, Dr. Sanjay Gupta's documentary Weeds back in 2013 followed Charlotte Feige's story and her parents using this high CBD strain to stop her seizures. It's neighboring to Nebraska. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It's such an ironic and bizarre story, which is why it really needs, we need to shine a light on it.
No question. And if I could have you put your I don't know, your crystal ball hat on, what do you think is going to help us change the trajectory in North America? And I'm talking United States and Canada. What do you think is going to help us try to finally move forward? Is it like I said earlier?
It's Montel Williams. It's Montel Williams running for president. Yeah. It's also regular people doing what they're already doing, which is trying to find answers for themselves. Our governments tend to be 10 steps behind us, as is evidenced by how Canada legalized. Canada legalized federally, not because the politicians were like, we got to legalize. It was because regular Canadians sued the government to say, I need access to this for my health. And so regular people seeing this works, seeing it's efficacious for their various ailments. I mean, you yourself, my friend, with your story of MS and overcoming it with cannabinoids, your daughter, that's my crystal ball, is you and your family. You and your family are a perfect example of how we need to keep moving this forward. It is unfortunate that our elected officials follow us. Maybe that's why you shouldn't be the president. Maybe you should be your example is who the politicians should be listening to.
All right, you know, I'm from your lips to God's ears, and I hope that some way, shape, or form politicians do start listening. But it's just, you know, it's a sad commentary when you even take a look at what's going on right now here in the United States. I mean, you know, we have a president and a vice president who claimed that they were going to try to do something in the cannabis space in the first 100 days in office and straight up lied to the American public and didn't do a damn thing and haven't done a damn thing. And now in the next couple of weeks, they keep hinting at trying to, you know, put some sort of, I don't want to call it legislation forward, but put some sort of a movement forward on behalf of cannabis. But they just kind of like, it just barely trickles out their lips. And yes, they're only doing so because they're trying to get an extra vote.
And, exactly. And, you know, because it's a voting year, they're going to try their best to engage the cannabis voters. Kamala Harris had a sit down with somebody last week who was asking for pardons, federal pardons for cannabis crimes. I think that's a really good step forward. Mm-hmm. For the vice president to be saying comments like this is far overdue. You know, she's got to talk to good old Joe and say, like, look, let's make this front and center. They'll get more votes from it. That's for sure.
Whoever steps up to the plate and actually supports cannabis reform first is going to get a huge amount of votes, especially when you're looking at the fact that here in the United States, for the first time, I think we broke 90% of people in America when polled will answer unequivocally that they support medical marijuana. And over 70% of the nation states that they will support legalization of cannabis. So right there alone would be reason enough. And, you know, I know that you guys probably laughed at us here in the United States over, you know, the Capitol invasion back here. And, you know, one of the things that people, I think, I don't know if Canadians know this or not, but, you know, there was a lot of pot being smoked when they invaded our Capitol.
I heard you say that when you're talking to Jim Belushi, and that was very, very funny. I it's sad and funny at the same time to think about how a bunch of weed smokers would be comfortable storming the Capitol.
Just bizarre. Right. But yeah. Bizarre. But that's exactly what was happening. It was a lot of people were talking about this, you know, claiming the stench of marijuana. Yeah. It was all over that building because there was a lot of people out there that were smoking. And it wasn't the smoking. The smoking was probably what kept them calmer than they could have been had they not been.
Right. Right.
I'm almost out of time, my friend, for this edition. But, you know, we got to have you back because there's so much more information. You and I just barely scratched the surface,
man. I didn't even get to tell you about the reefer man. Well, you know, that's something we should talk about next time, too.
I know. I'm almost out of time. But the reefer man is the play that you've been doing across the country. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. That was very funny. Reefer man was about a gardener, a lawyer turned gardener who became a pot superhero. That was my,
Wow. Okay. Well, can people find out information about that? Is there a website they can go to find that out, or is it just you?
Not anymore. No, I haven't done the show in a long time. Bless mm-hmm. you. So I, you know, but we can talk about that next time.
Let's do that for sure. Next time. I got to thank you so much. And I'll say it to my viewers and listeners, you know, we had an opportunity to sit here and talk to Mr. Russell Bennett today. And, you know, I know you are going to want to have him back here on Let's Be Blunt with Montelis as much as I'm going to want to have him back. So let's just call this a little teaser, just the introduction of Russell, because Russell's going to come back and chop it up with us in the future pretty soon. And sir, thank you so much. It's been a profound pleasure having you share some of your insights on Let's Be Blunt. And, you shed some light on some essential issues and remarkable stories. I want to make sure that people understand that Colton's Maze is a documentary that you're working on right now. It deserves our full support. So I'm going to urge our listeners that even though you don't have a GoFundMe page set up right now, but you will have one hopefully in the future, let's go ahead and put some money together so we can help, you know, not only help this individual child, but help all children who we now recognize that there are so many different illnesses that are benefited by cannabis, that we need to have the word get out and make people understand that this is something that should just be accessed and made available to anybody. So I'm going to thank you one more time also for being a part of Let's Be Blunt with Montel. I invite you back, and to all of you, let's make sure you stay frosty, stay informed. That's what you really have to do. Stay informed and start advocating for the truth, you know, and also advocate for the justice, okay? Justice for all of those, not just those who've been incarcerated, but justice for all of us who have a right to have something that God put on this planet for all of us to use. And that's whether you believe in God or not, okay? So let's just say that's something that the planet created for us. Remember, science states for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. One of those cannabinoids might be able to help you with whatever the issue is that you have in your life. So stay tuned, stay frosty, and stay blunt.
Thanks for joining me on Let's Be Blunt with Montel. Please make sure you're subscribed and hit the bell to be notified when new episodes post each week. We'd love to hear your feedback also, so please send us your comments.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
I'm Larry Mishkin, and I'd like to invite you to join Rob Hunt and me on our weekly podcast, The Deadhead Cannabis Show. Each week, we explore the latest cannabis and jam band news and reminisce with other deadheads and jam band lovers about the great musical acts that we've seen and heard. Check out a new episode every Monday.